Hello, I'm Peter Jarrett. This is number 0271, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of The Stuff File Program, number 0271. And coming up on this edition of The Stuff File Program, a return visit from Jay Pednote. He's the author of Afterlife, True Tales of the Restless Dead. It shares many stories, such as the one about Einstein's brain.
Einstein's brain was stolen during the autopsy. It was stolen by Dr. Harvey, the chief examiner, who conducted the autopsy on Einstein. And he held onto the brain. At the time, there was sort of a loophole that didn't account for brain specifically, the theft of it, the crime. Einstein's son tried to get it back, and Harvey wasn't having it. Ironically, Einstein was always worried that his brain would kind of become a subject of experimentation or put on display or things like that.
Pam Oakes is the author of Car Care for the Clueless, and she's on to talk about the car buying boom of the baby boomers.
They get the money. The kids are through college. Their house is paid off. They're going on vacations. They have that extra cash. And when it comes to upgrading their car, and believe it or not, they're projecting approximately 7 million vehicles being sold this year. The first time since 2006 that they've had such a high number. It's 17 million. They're replacing vehicles where the average age on today's roads is 11.4 years old.
Science writer Andrew Vizakis is back on the show. He's the night sky guy. And this time he's talking about the comet that was a near miss on Mars.
We only discovered the existence of comet sightings, Spring, in early 2013. NASA did the usual calculations that it does on newly discovered comets, and everyone took notice right away that there was something unusual about this particular one in its trajectory, that it seemed early on that it was intersecting with the planet Mars.
Plus, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0271 was Peter Jarrett, an old grade school friend of mine who lived all of his adult life in the UK, actually has lived all of his adult life in the UK, and he's the author of Brighton, Babylon, and he also did interviews for the Monty Python book, Pom Poms Up, From Puberty to Python and Beyond. Both of those books, by the way, are available on Amazon.com, and you'll find the link to those books and the link to Peter's website by going to thestufffile.com. Plus, we'll have Peter on the show as a future guest to talk about some of the work that he's been doing lately. We look forward to that as well. Thank you very much, Peter, for doing the guest slate on this program, this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, I'm just going to call this what it is. Sheer collective stupidity. We've got two stories that are similar in vein, so we've put them together, and here they are. Story number one. An unnamed teacher at Strong Elementary School in Maine has been put on a 21-day leave of absence by the school board after parents in the district became concerned. Her crime? She went to a teacher's seminar in Dallas, Texas. That's the extent of her crime. Here's a quote from a Maine School Administrative District No. 58 statement. At this time, we have no information to suggest that this staff member has been in contact with anyone who's been exposed to Ebola. However, the district and the staff members understand the parents' concerns. Now, the teacher not only didn't provide medical care for any Ebola victim, the conference hotel was 10 miles from the hospital where an Ebola victim died. The school board took action because a single parent, Matt Dexter, said it was reckless for the school to send her to a conference in a potentially harmful area for exposure. Other parents supported Dexter, saying the teacher could have come into contact with someone who came into contact with someone who came into contact with one of the nurses who cared for the Ebola victim. Wow. And the other story, in a very similar vein, Principal Lee Wanick of Hazelhurst, Mississippi Middle School has agreed to take a vacation and stay away from his school for a week after panicked parents freaked out after his summer travel. Now, he went to Zambia to attend his brother's funeral. The African country of Zambia, for anybody who bothers to take a look at a map, is at least 1,000 miles from any Ebola outbreak and has never had a reported Ebola outbreak within its borders. It's amazing how people who send their kids to school to get an education seem to lack it themselves. I'm just curious. Have all of these nervous Nelly parents had their flu shots? I mean, the flu kills more people than Ebola. For that matter, so does lightning. Anyway, moving right along, in October in Gresham, Oregon, a 21-year-old man openly carrying a handgun that he had just bought was robbed at gunpoint the same day. According to the police report, the robber apparently thought the victim's gun was nicer than his own. "I like your gun. Give it to me." Wow. You know, I just have to quietly shake my head over the prevailing gun culture. I mean, seriously, I have nothing to add to that. Anyway, moving right along, the classic HBO series Boardwalk Empire had its series finale this week after 5 glorious seasons. What a great program that was. And this show, if you have watched it, you know it's set against the backdrop of Prohibition, so I thought I would share a Prohibition story with you at this point. Well, it's a Prohibition story, sort of. You'll see what I mean. The rural municipality of Hanover, Manitoba, has prohibited alcohol sales for more than a century, or at least that's what everyone in the community believed. Now, as recently as 2006, that was the last attempt that they had to repeal the ban, and that one also failed. It failed by 30 votes. Well, here's the interesting part. Town officials finally decided recently, just recently, to research the prohibition, examining records that date back to 1880. And in July, they revealed, astonishingly, that there was no city bylaw that exists making the town dry. None. Whatsoever. It ain't on the books, so there's nothing to repeal. Well then, you can just about bet how many restaurateurs in Hanover are lining up to get those taps open as soon as humanly possible. Yeah, I mean, it's not on the books. Can't break a law that ain't there, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, now sometimes when committing a crime, your worst enemy isn't what moves, but what doesn't. We have a couple of stories of folks not ready for prime time crime. Story number one, 21-year-old William Dixon was arrested in Brentwood, Tennessee in August, fleeing a Best Buy store after arousing suspicion. According to the police report, Dixon, on foot, ran across all lanes of Interstate 65, avoiding death by high-speed vehicles, but the chase ended when he collided with a tree. And story number two, in October, an unnamed man was reported for snatching a bottle of wine from a shelf of a Sainsbury's supermarket in East Grinstead, England, and dashed from the store through the door, or at least dashed for the door. Didn't make it that far. He ran into a shelving unit and knocked himself unconscious. Gee, you know, I wonder if the tree and the shelving unit in those two stories are going to be earning public citations for their bravery. One has to wonder, don't you think? Okay, we have time for one more story before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. When a van on official business for the city of St. Paul, Minnesota, accidentally hit Megan Campbell's Nissan Pathfinder in August, Campbell naturally filed a claim against the city for the $1,900 in damage. Normally just the cost of business for a city, and one of about 400 claims that St. Paul has processed just this year alone. However, the van happened to be driven by the same Megan Campbell, an employee of St. Paul Parks and Recreation, who apparently could not avoid hitting her own parked SUV. At press time, the city is investigating, but expected to handle the claim as routine. Yeah, because there's absolutely no conflict there whatsoever, huh? None. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? It's been almost 1 year to the day that we talked to Jay Pednote. He is the author of Afterlife, True Tales of the Restless Dead. It's a compilation of real postmortem adventures. He's also the man behind the website, thehumanmarvels.com. And Jay joins us once again via Skype-to-Skype communications from Toronto. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us once again.
Thanks for having me again.
So when we last spoke, you were hoping to get this book published, and now it's out. And you were doing the publishing. It's self-published, and it's through the crowdsourcing, basically?
Yeah, exactly. I called upon my fans from the Human Marvels website to kind of lend some support, and I was able to raise the funds to get the book published, which is wonderful.
So did the experience of doing that go as you expected it to? Was it easier, harder? What was it like?
It absolutely did not go according to plan, as most plans don't go according to plan. There's a lot of ups and downs, a lot of trials and tribulations. I learned a lot from the experience, but I'm working on a second book, so it couldn't have been that much of a bad experience.
And you're going the same route with the second book as well, I take it?
I am, but it's going to be much more streamlined. I'm going to make some much more sensible decisions.
Okay. So, so now that the book is out, when did it come out, first of all?
It came out last week. October the 16th, I believe it was.
Okay. So is it too early to say how's it doing?
It's actually doing quite well. I had a soft launch shortly before that, and I've sold, they say with self-publishing, you can usually expect to sell about 100 copies, but I've vastly overtaken that number already, which is great with pre-orders. And I actually just learned today that it's reached the top 50 bestsellers list for its category on Amazon.com, which is phenomenal.
Well, congratulations to you on that. Considering the subject matter, and the last time we spoke to you on the program, we also talked about freak shows and the like. Considering the subject matter, are you surprised by the success or not?
You know what? I was very hopeful, and I'm very fortunate that a lot of my hopes have been realized. I am somewhat surprised, but I put a lot of work and effort into that, and the fact that I did the crowdsourcing route. I had all those funders that were built in, possible supporters and possible purchasers of the product. So I think that was a really good choice to kind of kickstart my writing career.
Again, as I said, when we talked last year, we talked about the upcoming book and we talked about freak shows in general, and timing is everything. I don't know if you had been aware of this at the time that you were putting this all together, but the very successful television series in the United States, which is also here in Canada, American Horror Show, their season 4 is called Freak Show and is getting a lot of buzz. Now, admittedly, I haven't seen it, but have you?
You know what? I absolutely have, and I actually did a little bit of consulting for the show. I did some consulting with the art department, and I did some consulting with the character development as well. And my website has been absolutely blowing up for the last 2 weeks now. I guess it's there in their second episode. The third episode was on Wednesday, and I'm expecting an actual. I'm actually shoring up my website a bit for this coming Wednesday because they're debuting a character that I wrote a definitive article on about 10 years ago. If you type in his name, my website comes up number one in search results. So I think people are going to be looking for him.
So of what you've seen, I mean, you obviously have an involvement with the show, but of what you've seen so far and what they've done, are you happy with the results? And the reason why I ask that is, you are involved in yourself in the world of freak shows, and there's sometimes there's a negative connotation about freak shows, and I'm sure you're very sensitive to the idea of how it's portrayed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my website is called The Human Marvels, and that's how I tend to refer to human oddities and whatnot. I tend not to use freaks too often, although there are some individuals that's their preferred term, and that was their preferred term back in the day as well. And as far as the show goes, it's so far, it's actually showing kind of both sides. It kind of actually is a bit of a throwback to the Todd Browning film, Freaks.
Right.
The freaks were actually the good guys, and it was the normal folks that were kind of the ones that were ugly on the inside and outside, right?
Okay, so let's talk about the book now that it's out, Afterlife, True Tales of the Restless Dead. I believe the last time we talked to you, you told us the story of the fellow whose human remains were used and actually painted over and used for years and years and years, and people didn't even know they were human remains.
Yeah, the story of Elmer McGurdy.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. But some, and that's in the book. I'm because you were talking about that. But some of the other things that we didn't get a chance to talk about. What's the story about Einstein's brain?
Well, Einstein's brain. It's an incredible story. Just because it's if I was to tell you this and if it wasn't true, you'd swear it was a bold-faced lie. But I mean, Einstein's brain was stolen during the autopsy. He was stolen by the Dr. Harvey, who was the chief examiner who conducted the autopsy on Einstein. And he held on to the brain. He didn't return it. There's kind of at the time, there was sort of a loophole that didn't account for a brain specifically, the theft of it being a crime. Einstein's son tried to get it back, and Harvey wasn't having it. Ironically, Einstein was always worried that his brain would kind of become the subject of experimentation or put on display or things like that. His caretaker didn't do any of that. He just kind of kept it. Eventually, what happened was, as he got older, he decided, well, maybe it's time I kind of return this. And it was actually during an interview with a newspaper reporter that he decided, you know what, let's look up Einstein's heirs and see who he can return this brain to. And so the reporter and the caretaker, they hopped into a Buick, they put Einstein's brain in the trunk, and off they went to California to locate Einstein's daughter. Actually, an interesting side note to the adventure is at some point, they actually made a stop off at one of the reporter's old friends, who was the author of Naked Lunch. together they had lunch with Einstein's brain outside in the trunk of a Buick.
See, there are so many titles of books you just mentioned right there. Lunch with Einstein's Brain, uh-huh. Einstein's Brain in a Buick. I mean, you just go on and on and on. It's amazing.
And so the most ironic is they showed up unannounced at Einstein's daughter's home, completely unannounced in California. And she wanted absolutely nothing to do with her father's brain. And today, despite Einstein's wishes, his brain is actually on display, slices of it anyway, segments of it, at the Mütter Museum in Philadelphia.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's just weird on so many levels.
And that's just one of the stories.
And that's just one of the stories in the book. We've got about a minute and a half left. I have to ask about, I understand there are human remains, rather, on the moon, and they've been there since 1999. Who's up there?
You know what? Schumacher. There's an astronomer by the name of Schumacher. You may have heard the term Schumacher before because he has comets and all sorts of astronomy devices named after him.
Schumacher Levy?
Schumacher, Eugene Schumacher.
Yeah.
Was his name, yeah. And he, his remains were loaded into a lunar probe. And once that mission was complete, the probe, of course, stays on the moon. So he's the only human being whose remains are currently residing on the moon.
Kind of lonely up there. There's just him, an orbiting golf ball, a flag, and a lunar a rover.
Yeah, and a few footprints, and that's about it.
And
but there is a service, though, that you can actually have your remains launched to the moon now. So there is a commercial service, but it's several thousands of dollars.
A fascinating idea for a book. I'm glad you got it out there. The book is called Afterlife, True Tales of the Restless Dead, and people can find it on Amazon, correct? It's available for the Kindle, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's available on all platforms. It's also available through, I have a website dedicated just for the site, for the book as well. It's therestlessdead.com. Has all points to all your preferred methods of getting the book, as well as you can order an autographed copy from me if you feel like devaluing the book.
Well, congratulations again, and thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. I really appreciate it.
J. Pednote, author of Afterlife, True Tales of the Restless Dead. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0271, and you'll find the links to Jay's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about all those baby boomers out there buying new cars. Plus, Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, talks about that comet that just missed Mars. And of course, we do indeed have an idiot of the day and lots more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, Pauline Chai and her estranged husband, Ku K Peng, who, by the way, is a Laura Ashley executive, are battling in a London courtroom in a very expensive divorce, with the current issue to determine whether the English judge has jurisdiction instead of courts in the couple's native Malaysia. Now, in the course of bringing the British judge up to date, Chai casually described how she has supported her husband's relentless nature by revealing that he would do copious amounts of work for 4 hours at a time at home while sitting on the toilet. "Ku, he's got backache there," she said, "so I got the idea of a padded toilet seat for him." Well, isn't that a loving bride, huh? In better times. Okay, that, by the way, is what I would call TMI. Way, way too much information. And I think we're burying the lead here. You know, it's not the divorce or the fact that he would work while sitting on the toilet for 4 hours. I think the real question is, what the heck is in his diet that would require him to be on the toilet for 4 hours? That's what I'd like to know. Anyway, if you love something, set it free. That could be the tagline to the last story I read, but it's actually the intro line to the next story I'm sharing with you. Yes, if you love something, set it free, and if it doesn't return, try to climb down its chimney and make it love you. That might have been what one woman was thinking when she was discovered stuck in a chimney of a Southern California house and had to be rescued. Ventura County Fire Captain Ron Oatman says firefighters responding to neighbors' reports of a crying woman had to chisel away much of the chimney and lubricate it with dish soap to free 30-year-old Genoveva Nunez Figueroa. She was arrested on suspicion of illegal entry and giving false information to police. Police say she knows the owner of the home, and she who wasn't there, by the way. they wouldn't elaborate, but according to video, the homeowner identified the woman as someone he met online and had dated. He told local news that he cut off their relationship. I wonder why. She had no clear injuries, but was taken to hospital for an evaluation. You know, basically a checkup from the neck up. Here is the quote of the day, by the way, from the homeowner. I hope she gets help. I hope she stays offline. I'm guessing that not only does she have some psychological issues, by the way, but perhaps she might still believe in Santa Claus. Now, in an interview with a local newspaper, 36-year-old Timothy Anderson of Longview, Texas, bragged that he had caught a large alligator snapping turtle. That caught the interest of the Gregg County game warden. Anderson not only didn't have a fishing license, but hunting, capturing, and possessing that breed of turtle is illegal in Texas. When game wardens arrived at Anderson's house, they were not able to retrieve the critter. Anderson had eaten it. Its shell was confiscated, and Anderson was arrested for possession of a threatened species. Wow. Eating a rare turtle. I wonder what that tastes like. Probably somewhere between bald eagle and panda. Anyway, 46-year-old Victor Thompson was arrested in St. Petersburg, Florida in October for possession of a synthetic marijuana called Master Kush Spice, which he insisted is legal in his native New Hampshire, and is apparently an out-of-control New England Patriots fan. Now, I've seen his mugshot. This is something to behold. Now, he has tattooed his entire bald head with a painstakingly replica version of quarterback Tom Brady's helmet. The attention to detail on the authentic design and colors is remarkable, including subtle add-ons such as the American flag, NFL logo, and helmet manufacturer, which is Rydell. Not only is Brady's number 12 properly placed, so is the green dot identifying the helmet as radio-ready for messages from the sideline. Okay, if this isn't a major cry for help, I don't know what is. Really. And like I said, I've seen his picture. Whoa. Anyway, we have time for one more story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. People in Minneapolis arrested 38-year-old Nicholas Mullenmaster in October as the man who inexplicably flushed nails and other pieces of metal down toilets of several restaurants since August, causing thousands of dollars in damage. In most incidents, 2 to 3 pounds of nails clog the toilets, requiring plumbing repair charges of up to $1,000 each. But at one Starbucks, a wall had to be removed. Although witnesses and surveillance video seems to identify Nicholas as the culprit, he denied any involvement and thus no motive for the toilet attacks has emerged. Really? Has anybody checked to see if any of his relatives are plumbers? Just asking. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Auto sales are on the rise, but some folks might be surprised as who's buying the vehicles. In the United States last year, the average car buyer was almost 52 years old. So why the trend in older buyers? Well, I have a theory, but let's hear from Pam Oakes. She is an ASA certified technician and the owner of Pam's Motor City. She's also the author of Car Care for the Clueless. And Pam joins us on the line right now from Florida. Hi, Pam.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, as I said, I have a theory. I just think, you know, the boomers, basically, and I'm part of the baby boomer crowd, the low end of it, boomers just have the money.
They do, and that's it. They have the money. They have, the kids are through college, their house is paid off. They're going on vacations. They have that extra cash. And when it comes to upgrading their car, and believe it or not, they're projecting approximately 7 million vehicles being sold this year, the first time since 2006 that they've had such a high number. It's 17 million. They're replacing vehicles where the average age on today's roads is 11.4 years old.
Wow. So, again, we're not surprised at who's buying the cars, but are you surprised by the volume of cars that are being bought?
Well, actually, yes and no. I'm surprised because how it just took off all of a sudden. Well, last year we saw an inkling of this, you know, starting to up ramp. But this year, I'm really surprised with the amount of cars that are projected to be sold. But there's a lot of vehicles out there. Like I said, they're aging out. And the consumer's looking between, should I put X amount into this car? Is it a car payment? Is it a year of car payments? Or should I just go and pull the trigger and get a new vehicle?
Now, you're talking to us. We're here in Canada, and I don't think the age or length of time of the age of cars out there is as great as it is in the United States. But there's a difference here, and that is, I think, our harsher winters take a bigger toll on vehicles than they do in some parts of the United States. So the reason why I bring that up is, do you find that there is a regional situation as to the age of vehicles in the United States? In other words, are cars lasting longer in warmer climes as opposed to where there's snow and salt and so on and so forth?
Oh, definitely. You know, I'm originally from the east side of Detroit, and I've traded blizzards for hurricanes, but you definitely hit the nail on the head there. They will age quicker in more harsh climates, you know, like Montreal. But the snow and the road salts and the road chemical, the consumer can really help themselves by, believe it or not, having their vehicle washed during the winter. And we're talking, we want to get that road grime off the paint, of course, because we want our vehicles to look great during the summer. But it's all about underneath that undercarriage. We want to make sure that we're getting that salt and that road chemical off the steering gear components, the suspension, fuel lines, things like that, that are made of steel and do corrode. And by doing so, we're going to make that car last longer, it's going to be stronger and less repairs.
I know, I feel I'm probably as guilty as everyone else. In the winter, sometimes my car looks like a salt lick for cows. It's really sad at times.
I remember those days, yes. But, you know, in the warmer climates, especially climates that are in low humidity, you're not going to have that rust issue, you know, that decay issue. But still, from where you're at up there in Montreal, definitely, you know, twice a month, go out there and have that run through the car wash. Because maybe a few bucks up front, but it's going to save you hundreds, if not thousands, in repairs later on down the road.
So getting back to the amount of cars being sold these days, do you find that this is a trend that's going to continue into the future, or is this a momentary blip?
No, I think we're going to see this maybe for the next year or two, because like I said, the vehicles are aging out, and they do need to be replaced. People are seeing that their repairs are exceeding a car payment or a year of car payments, and it's time to play catch-up. We've had a long drought with very low car sales, and it's time to get back to where we should be.
Besides those reasons you just mentioned, is part of the problem, or not part of the problem, part of the success, I should say, does that come from car companies just starting to do things right and building vehicles that consumers want?
Well, you know, it's all about what the consumer wants. And whether the cars are built right or wrong, it's going to all be on the consumer's appeal to that vehicle. Remember, if you're going to go out and purchase a vehicle, you're going to want to purchase something that you like, that you can live with, a color that you prefer, because you don't want to get something for a great bargain and then every day go out in the garage or out in the driveway or parking lot and look at the car as you're approaching it and saying, God, I really hate that car. Because then you're not going to be doing the proper repairs, the proper maintenance, and it's not going to last you. You're going to lose money on it. So, you know, you need to choose something that you really like, a favorite color, for an example, or, you know, a body style that kind of appeals to you. So when you go out and you look at that car, you're going to say, I'm so glad I purchased that vehicle. And then you're going to have it for a long time because you're going to do the repairs when needed and the maintenance.
So the car companies are doing some things right. Let's talk a few moments about some of the things they're doing wrong. There's also a record number of auto recalls. What do you attribute that to?
You know, it's all about quality and the standards that aren't being met. It's quality, quality, quality. You know, and yesterday alone, Fiat Chrysler, they recalled, believe it or not, another 434,000 plus Chargers and Durangos because of an alternator, quality issue with the alternator. And that goes for all the other makes and models as well. It's all about quality. And I'll give you a prime example, Aston Martin. Everybody knows what an Aston Martin vehicle is, a great sports car. They recalled literally 75% of their production from 2007 to 2014 because of a faulty accelerator component. They made the component. Of course, everything in your car is, you know, it's not made by the manufacturer. It's made by other companies for the manufacturers, for the manufacturer specs. And they have a specific plastic specification for this accelerator component. Well, they hired this company, and this company farmed it out to another company. They sublet it, and that company was using counterfeit DuPont plastic. And so when the person would get in the vehicle and they take that accelerator and they push it to the floor like any Aston Martin vehicle should be, that piece was actually breaking, and the car would go to an idle and roll to a stop. Thank God that's all it was doing. But it was all about the quality of the component. And that's where this all comes about, is the quality of the component.
You mentioned the third-party companies involved, and I heard a theory, too, that while there is a certain amount of fault with those situations, there's also a certain amount of fault that goes to the car manufacturers, because they've been nickel and diming some of these third-party companies, saying, you know, you want to sell us a part for a vehicle that costs $2.75, and we can only do it for $2.50. And the third-party company says, okay, and that's where part of the quality problem comes in.
Yeah, that's very true. It's all about, you know, the greed and getting the contract instead of saying the right thing and saying, wait a minute, we can't successfully create this component for you without this price because this is what it's going to take, instead of, you know, cutting corners here and there. Unfortunately, the manufacturers, they understand that these secondary companies that are making these car parts for them are doing little things here and there, and they need to all be accountable to the substandard components on our vehicles that fail when they should not be failing under normal situations, normal driving conditions.
We have less than a minute to go here, and I just want to mention the fact that earlier you talked about car maintenance, which is something that you also talk about in your book, which is a car care for the clueless, correct?
Yes, it is, yes.
And how can one get your book?
You can get that on our website, carcareforthecluelist.com, all one word spelled out. We have a storm guide. We actually have some blizzard tips because that is coming up. And we have a free car care guide, an interactive form. Please take advantage of this and making all of you guys a savvy car consumer.
Excellent. And Pam, what do you drive?
Well, I've got my great-grandfather's 69 Plymouth.
Oh, sweet.
And then I've got a weekend car, and then, of course, we have our daily shop truck, which I drive.
Which model Plymouth?
69 Plymouth. It's a Belvedere with a Roadrunner body. They've made 7,068 of them.
Nice. Nice car. Pam, mm-hmm. It's a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for being on the program with us.
And thank you.
Pam Oakes, author of Car Care for the Clueless. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0271, and you'll find the links to Pam's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Every year, we hold the Wacky Warning Label Contest, and the person who finds the funniest common sense warning label in America wins a prize of $1,000. Over the years, we've seen some pretty hilarious labels, like the one on a motorized go-kart that warned, "This product moves when used," and a 4-inch long fishing lure with huge hooks dangling off the end that warned, "Harmful if swallowed." But did you know that the first Wacky Warning Label we ever saw came from a Halloween costume? That's right. It was found on a Batman cape, and it warned, "Cape does not enable user to fly."
Let's be fair, we've had a lot of fun with that one. And when my boys were younger, they appeared on TV shows in France and Japan wearing that cape. The show's hosts wondered why there are so many warnings about common sense things in America. The answer is that with all the frivolous lawsuits here, the courts can sometimes be even scarier than those Halloween costumes. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the near miss on the red planet. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. But I've got one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you right here, right now, on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Before we get to our last guest on the program, the Night Sky Guy, stick around for that, okay? Two men ran out of the door of a closed-for-the-night Houston Family Dollar store back on October the 7th, empty-handed after a failed theft attempt. Now, according to surveillance video, one man had removed items from a bottom shelf while the store was still open, and crawled behind the shelf space just before his partner came by and restocked the shelf, thus hiding his buddy. Now, the partner then made a purchase and left, and after the last employee had closed up at around 11 p.m., the hidden, and I must say extremely patient man, crawled out, surely intending to let his partner in and start snatching things. But the hidden man was only able to take a few steps before a motion detector sounded an alarm and both men fled on foot, not even bothering to grab an item or two on the way out. Well, you know, up until that motion sensor part, this was a pretty well thought out plan. And as, like I said, he's a very patient guy. Now, even though it's, you know, somewhat well thought out, it's not George Clooney Ocean's 11 brilliant, but it's worthy of some mention anyway, don't you think? Kudos for at least trying. Not that I believe that crime should pay, but, you know, you got to consider someone's ingenuity every once in a while. Anyway, let's get to our last guest on the program, shall we? For the first time in more than a million years, Mars had a close shave with a spectacular comet flyby this past week. The so-called Siding Spring Comet came within a mere hair's breadth of a collision with Mars. In astronomical terms, that translates to a proximity of 140,000 kilometers from the surface, or slightly more than one-third of the distance between the Earth and the Moon. Now, to talk about this, we're joined once again by Andrew Vizekas, the Night Sky Guy, and a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada. He joins us via Skype to Skype communications from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Peter.
So this was a near miss, as the saying goes, in space parlance. And the thing I find so fascinating about it, seeing the models that were made of where this comet was going, it was kind of interesting how all the satellites that are circling around Mars were moved to the back end, like sort of like they were hiding.
Yeah, that's right. Mars basically took the duck and cover strategy when it came to protecting their satellites. I mean, it was the idea was to position them on the backside of the planet from where the comet was approaching, so that they could use the planet basically as a shield to protect them from a lot of particles that were flying off the comet, and they didn't want to get pelted basically by all that material. You have to remember that a comet is a very violent place. The surface of a comet, there's a lot of like geysers exploding off of it. It's a very violent landscape where these basically it's a you could think of it as a frozen snow dirty snowball, and that happens to be the size of a mountain in this case, and it slowly begins to melt as it approaches the sun, and then it throws, as it melts, there's a lot of gas pockets that are hidden underneath the surface that explode as the comet's ice surface ice is melting into space. And when it explodes, it throws out a lot of gas and dust. And, you know, this dust is traveling at speeds of over 200,000 kilometers per hour. And even something the size of a grain of sand is like a bullet if it hits the spacecraft. And these spacecrafts are not designed to withstand these kind of cosmic bullets. And so, you know, if one would hit a spacecraft, one of these sand grains could actually puncture a fuel line, fry the computer, basically render the satellites dead. So they basically, NASA months ago, took the strategy of positioning them in their orbits so that when the comet is the closest to Mars, they'll be all on the opposite side. And according to what we've gotten back from the satellites, they're all healthy.
Well, how much of a warning did NASA have about this comet?
Well, not much, really. I mean, we only discovered the existence of comet sighting springs in early 2013. So a little over a year and a half ago, an Australian astronomer discovered it, and so the name of the comet is basically named after the observatory where the discovery was made. NASA did the usual calculations that it does on newly discovered comets, and everyone took notice right away that there was something unusual about this particular one in its trajectory, that it seemed early on that it was intersecting with the planet Mars. And there was actually a lot of hubbub on the internet related to the comet maybe even impacting the Mars. There was really a sizable percentage, a chance, that it would actually hit Mars. And early on, we didn't even know what the size of the comet was. Some people were predicting that it was somewhere around 10-15 kilometers wide. And if that was true and it did hit Mars, that would have been quite spectacular, and it would have been unprecedented as well. But luckily for the spacecrafts that are there on Mars right now, that did not happen.
Well,
it was just a near miss.
Well, do we know where it came from, and do we also have an idea of where it's going? In other words, is this a comet that it's as like, for instance, the ones we're familiar with, Halley's Comet and Hale-Bopp and all the others, is this a comet that has been by before, or is this new to the area?
It's, that's something that we're not quite clear on. The suggestions are based on the trajectory. If we look at the track of the comet, it appears that it comes from very far reaches of the solar system, really literally in the most outer frozen parts. Way beyond Pluto we're talking about. There's a region, there's actually a reservoir of comets, frozen comets, sort of like a donut shaped region around the solar system. And it's called the Oort cloud. And the Oort cloud is really just billions and billions of these comets in basically suspended animation. And they just sit there quietly orbiting the sun at these vast distances. Every once in a while, though, the sun's gravity sort of tugs at one of these slumbering comets, and it starts pulling it in towards the inner solar system. And that's what happened with Sighting Spring, we think, is that it was just taken out of its orbit. Maybe it bumped into another comet, we don't know, but something happened and pulled it in. And we think that it may never have actually visited the inner solar system before. We're not sure, but it's been at least a million years, since this, the only other chance that it would have had to come towards the sun before.
Okay,
and we don't really know where exactly, if it's going to probably going to go back out to the Oort cloud, but we don't know exactly in what direction.
Okay, so if we know it was out there in that cloud, if that hypothesis is correct, from the time that it started heading toward Mars and the sun, basically, how long was that trip?
We're talking at least tens of thousands of years, if not hundreds of thousands of years, that trip that it took to come and visit Mars as it did this week. So we only clued into it because it started melting. The surface started becoming more active. These geysers started gushing and basically brightening the comet. So that we can see it with a telescope. Otherwise, when it's farther out there and it's really in deep freeze, far from the heat of the sun, it's very hard to see them because they're very dark and there's nothing to light them up. But once they become active and they're closer to the sun, that's when we can clue into these things. So, you know, we may have seen it only a year and a half ago, but its journey has lasted, you know, literally for eons.
Okay, so now, as you say, those little particle of dust could cause some serious damage, even on a flyby. All the satellites were on the other side of Mars, so they were okay. What about the stuff that's on the surface of Mars, like the rovers? Were there any concern about some of those particles of dust hitting the rovers, the stuff that we have on the surface?
Actually, no. That was something they knew early on, that because Mars does have a tenuous atmosphere, that basically protects anything on the surface. I mean, this atmosphere is only a small fraction, a small percentage of thickness of the Earth, but it's enough to basically shield the ground from any particles that would be even these sand grain sized particles. But the side benefit of what they were expecting, and we still don't know if anything came of it, we'll have to wait in the coming weeks, we'll get the data come back. But one of the two actually interesting things was the dust particles that actually hit the planet from the tail of the comet may have actually produced a meteor shower that could have been visible to the space, to the rover, and to the space orbiters as well. And also very interesting is auroras, northern lights on Mars, may have been triggered by the stream of gas that also came off of the comet. So in that classical tail that we think of a comet having, that tail is made of gas and dust. And so the planet, Mars, actually went through that tail of the comet, actually went right through it. And so we think that may have triggered auroras, the interaction of the comet gas with the atmosphere.
Okay, so we have just about a minute to go. I just want to know, with all the technology we have both on and around Mars, what are we going to learn by this flyby with the whatever data all of those instruments are possible to collect?
Well, first off, there's stuff we'll learn from the planet Mars of how it interacted with the gas and dust of the comet's tail. That's going to teach us a little bit about the planetary atmospheres, really, of what they're made of. And we don't really understand too much of the dynamics of other planet atmospheres other than the Earth. And so there'll be stuff we'll learn from that. But then also the comet itself was very interesting because this is a long period comet. These are the comets that come from the Oort cloud so far away. They're considered as time capsules from when the solar system was born 5 billion years ago. Nothing has really changed with their structure. And so this is the first time in history we were able to get an up-close view of one of these long period comets from the Oort cloud. And this is going to teach us more about where did the solar system come from and where our own planet originated from as well.
Fascinating stuff. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Andrew. How can people find your stuff in general?
Folks can actually come to the National Geographic News to read my Starstruck weekly stargazing column that comes out every Monday, and they can also check out my daily column on Geekquinox, Yahoo News Canada as well.
And also there are also links to your website through thenightskyguy.com, correct?
Exactly, and they can also post their questions on Twitter at @thenightskyguy.
Excellent. Thank you very much, sir.
Clear skies.
Andrew Vizekas, the Night Sky Guy. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com, and of course you'll find a link on my website at thestufffile.com. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
When a Broward County, Florida deputy spotted a car with a headlight out and the same car nearly ran a red light, he initiated a traffic stop. But the driver, 19-year-old Brianna Watkins, kept driving for another quarter mile before pulling over. Once Watkins stopped and the officer wrote the ticket, the other deputy heard something in Watkins' trunk. After opening the trunk, they allegedly found Watkins' 5-month-old baby nestled in there with some head shears, a rusty metal hanger, a tire iron, and a used gas can, plus other hazardous materials. The baby had allegedly been sitting in the lap of the 14-year-old girl who was riding with Watkins, and when the police went to pull her over, she allegedly told the girl to put the baby in the trunk to avoid a ticket for not having a car seat. Watkins was arrested and charged with child abuse, resisting an officer, and five traffic-related offenses, including driving without a license, because they never have a license in these stories, do they? Really? And failure to have a child restraint. Yes, she's not exactly the mother of the year. But seriously, why would someone stash their infant in the trunk with sharp, rusty objects and toxic materials to get out of a traffic fine? Well, one reason, and one reason only. She's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0271. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0271. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.